whodunit? Was it Jamie Lee Curtis, Chris Evans, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette? This is the question at the center of the marvelous new comedy, Knives Out.
The film is directed and written by Rian Johnson. He did movies like Looper and Brick, as well as Star Wars The Last Jedi. And the stellar cast goes on and on to include Ana de Armas, Daniel Craig, Lakeith Stanfield, and playing the man in the whodunit to whom it was done, Christopher Plummer. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. I wrote that intro and made Stephen say all that about the whodunit. We're talking about the terrific fun to be had with Knives Out today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants, and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair today, Margaret Willison, co-host of the Appointment TV podcast and one half of Two Bossy Dames. Welcome back, lovely Margaret.
I am so thrilled to be here.
Well, we are thrilled. We are thrilled to have you, especially in this movie that we enjoyed so much. To set it up a little bit more, although obviously we don't want to give anything away, Knives Out is about the investigation into the death of Harlan Thrombey, a great mystery writer name. He's a wealthy mystery writer, played by Christopher Plummer, as we said, surrounded by all manner of greedy family, and his young nurse, Marta, who's played by Ana de Armas. A couple of police detectives and the private eye, played by Daniel Craig, descend on the big old creaky house where the family is all gathered, and then they try to figure out how Thrombey ended up dead. If this sounds to you kind of like Clue, the movie knows it sounds like Clue. The movie knows some of its own references,
sure.
But I had a great time at this movie. Glenn, what did you think?
I mean, come on. This movie had me at the poster. It is such a great poster. This is an old school whodunit that ticks all those boxes incredibly satisfyingly, but it's got a sense of humor that feels contemporary.
Yeah.
And it's got a cast. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis in a crimson jumpsuit. That's it. That's the tweet. You can watch this film just for the performances. It is not purely plot-driven. I mean, the second time I saw it, and I do recommend seeing it as many times as you can, the second time I saw it, I was particularly watching the ways that Don Johnson interacts with the staff. There is so much humor in just that
tiny point.
So, you know, casting directing should be an Oscar category. Yes. This would win in a walk. My one quibble, tiny quibble, is that Lakeith Stanfield just generally is a weird dude, and he's playing a very straight-ahead character
but
in this.
But see, I like that in this, because he's playing the cop. He's playing one of the two cops who's working sort of with Daniel Craig. I liked the fact that he was kind of a straight man
I
in this.
Kept waiting for something, but anyway, that is a tiny quibble, because this is the perfect, talk about timing, this is the perfect Thanksgiving movie.
Yes.
Take everybody in the family, go see this damn thing, it's great.
Yeah, I agree. Margaret, what did you think?
I loved it so much. I have so many, like, thoughtful things that I can say about it, and I'll save that for the second half. And what I want to say first is all the money Marvel spent on special effects, thousands and thousands of dollars, and all they needed to do was put Chris Evans in one white cable knit sweater.
It's true.
Light him perfectly and just step back and let the camera love him the same way I do for like a 5-minute scene. That's all they needed.
Yeah.
It's better than any explosion. It's better than anything. It's just one of the most potent pieces of cinema I've ever encountered.
I agree. And I think, you know, I did have the thought when I was watching him in this. I'm like, they work so hard, just like you say, to make him appear to be like model of human man in Captain America.
Yeah.
But like in this, I was like, no, that's actual model. I mean, a particular kind of human man, obviously. But
and you can just see him relishing everything to do with getting to play a part where he gets like such great laugh lines.
It's amazing. He's so good in this. Stephen, what do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you guys are saying. This movie is so fun. Glenn, as you said, this is absolutely the perfect take your family to this movie on Thanksgiving. Among other things, it manages to be very fresh while playing with very old formulas.
Uh-huh.
We have talked sometimes on this show about the revitalization of rom-coms. This is a revitalization of the cozy whodunit. This is a revitalization of Agatha Christie mysteries that manages to be so fun and fresh. And as you said, Glenn, like from the opening second, you are in such good hands.
Yeah.
Visually speaking, there is this amazing piece of art that is a bunch of, I think you see it in the poster. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of knives pointing at this center that is perfectly head-shaped. And so you have the different characters in the movie being interviewed with their head in the middle of this piece of that has knives pointing at them.
Like a saint's halo of murder.
This movie knows exactly what it is every second of the way. There is a reference to the house being a big clue board. Even the name Harlan Thrombey is actually a throwback to a character in a Choose Your Own Adventure book called Who Killed Harlow Thrombey? There's just layer upon layer of these details. And it's interesting, like Rian Johnson, who wrote and directed this movie, he is great not just with a plot twist, but with a plot.
Uh-huh.
And this is such an intricately plotted movie. I just keep coming back to the point again and again. You're in excellent hands.
Yeah.
You know you're in excellent hands immediately. It's so pleasurable.
And the plot part of this, and this is the part when I saw it the second time, because Glenn and I both saw it in Toronto, and then we saw it this week because both of us were like, oh, yeah, I'm going to see that again. So the second time I saw it, my focus was really on it does make sense.
It plays fair.
When you go back and see it again, kind of knowing what's coming, everything kind of, it has exactly the feel you want it to have, which is I didn't really see all of the twists coming the first time I saw it. But in retrospect, I had the correct information to figure out, as much as you can. And so I felt like it had played completely fair. I felt like they didn't suddenly reveal that somebody had done something that made no sense. There are a couple of great payoffs in the movie of earlier information that's kind of dropped and then it comes back at the end in that really satisfying, oh, that's right, kind of way. I admired it so much from a plot perspective. But like you guys were saying, like these performances are just between this and Watchmen, the year that Don Johnson is having is not something I anticipated. Everybody, like Toni Collette is playing this kind of like goofed out, new agey.
Gooped out.
And it's just, I found that really funny. I find the Michael Shannon performance really funny. And Ana de Armas, who is, to I think a lot of the people who will see this movie, the least familiar main character in this by a mile, I think really holds her own against this very big cast. In many ways, she is the central character. And she's so, I think, able to juggle all the different emotions of that character. Oh my gosh, I found it so satisfying.
It's incredible how she manages to hold her own in this space where she's like the only straight man in the movie.
Right, totally.
And she's still just absolutely riveting. Like every moment that you spend with her, you're happy to be spending with her and you're interested about what she's thinking and feeling. And she manages to be transparent, but not so transparent that you ever think you have a perfect bead on what her motivations are.
Right, exactly.
I'm surprised we've kind of barely touched on the gigantic honey-baked ham at the center of this movie, which is the performance by Daniel Craig, which is he's acting so big having so much fun.
Yeah.
I loved him as Benoit Blanc.
Uh-huh. I'm just mad we're not going to get a Benoit Blanc series.
Oh, man.
Well, Johnson has talked about potentially doing more Benoit Blanc movies.
Gotta.
Oh, I would be so on board.
The thing that this made me remember was I remember when I saw the trailer for Logan Lucky, the Soderbergh movie, where Daniel Craig played the prison inmate who was like an explosives expert. And it's also a really broad, accented, very different kind of thing from if you think of him as James Bond. And the fact that he's now doing these like really quite broadly silly performances pleases me so deeply.
Yeah, I mean, what it made me think of was Murder on the Orient Express, the kind of chronic film, and thinking, oh, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You have this giant detective in this crazy Looney Tune accent, and you have this cast of stars, and it just felt leaden. And this just feels so alive. And I'm sitting there the second time watching it thinking, this is going to be huge. This is a four-quadrant hit.
Yeah.
This is so much fun. There's going to be a backlash because nothing this fun, this pure popular I'm trying to figure out where it's going to come from. And it might be some snobs are going to say that the Daniel Craig character is too big.
But maybe.
It's so fun.
I did want to talk about this because I was wondering about this because we're heading into awards season and we're heading into sitting down and watching a lot of like The Irishman and a lot of these like big, heavy, you know, portentous, dark movies, some of which I'm sure will be absolutely fantastic and we will be talking about them all awards season. The knock on this as like an Oscars contender is that it's entertaining.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I believe. I believe it can get an Oscar. I believe it could even get a Best Picture nomination if it makes enough money.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it makes $300 million domestically, if it's a absolute monster.
Pop culture happy hour army assemble.
But you know what I'm saying? I think if it's an absolutely monstrous commercial hit, I think it could potentially happen. The other thing is Johnson is a kind of established. He did Brick and Looper.
Ryan, not Don.
Exactly. Ryan Johnson is kind of established as a serious person. Mm-hmm. And I do not endorse that kind of bifurcation. Mm-hmm. But I think it would help that he's they respect him already.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Margaret?
I was going to say that if I had my druthers, and I think it's actually one of the less likely awards for it to be nominated for, but I would love to see it nominated for costume design.
Yeah.
Because I talked a little bit about the sweater, but the sweater is just one thing. Every character in this movie is dressed in such a rich and appealing way, but in also a way that communicates so much about the various different characters. And I just think, like, if you care about clothing at all, if you've, like, ever liked knitwear.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say.
Watch this movie on mute.
Outstanding achievement in knitwear. Yeah, absolutely.
I think the costumes and the art direction in general.
Yeah. Production design.
The feel they give that house.
It's so good.
That they give the grounds of that house. Mm-hmm. You know, only small parts of the movie take place away from that house.
Mm-hmm.
This movie does fit in with a lot of the themes that have come up around award season, particularly around class. This movie fits perfectly next to, for example, Parasite. You know, kind of about eating the rich. It fits in with Hustlers in terms of the kind of class warfare at its center.
Yeah. Well, and I think we talked when we saw Last Christmas, which we don't have to revisit, but when we saw that, we talked a little bit about the fact that it has a story that kind of incorporates the idea that tension about immigration has kind of permeated daily life enough that it even comes into sort of romantic comedies and things like that. I think in this film, there's a very kind of clever, acidic immigration-related storyline having to do with Marta and her mother and sister. And I thought the way they did that, both in ways that really underscored the vulnerability of her family.
And mistakes.
And also a couple of just wickedly funny. There's a wickedly funny runner at the expense of this oblivious family that I think is so smart and good. I think this is how to do it. This is how to kind of take a real life issue and fold it into a film so that you acknowledge however present it is without kind of tripping over it, even in a really broad, funny comedy.
I will see this movie again for sure, probably by the time you hear this.
Normally, I try to say I don't have emotions over whether movies flop. Oh, I would have such
this
emotions.
Can't be
over
the
this
widows
one.
Of 2019. Please,
take your family.
Don't let me be widows.
Take your family. Enjoy it. It is a great joy to see. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Margaret Willison at Mrs. Friday Next. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you
so much.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, subscribe to our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday.
This week on Bullseye, Lin-Manuel Miranda on His Dark Materials, hip-hop, and life after Hamilton.
I know it's the first line of my obituary. So if that line is handled, then what else can I do with my time here?
It's Bullseye for MaximumFun.org and NPR.